Welcome to Shortcut to Sunday. I'm Ben.
And I'm Bruce.
And this is your podcast for October 29th, 2023, the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost in year A. And we are coming to you not live on behalf of Holy Family Episcopal Church in Fishers, Indiana. Bruce, my goodness, we're almost done with this season.
Yeah.
How are you, though, today?
I am doing fine. Thank you.
Very, very good. Very good. Usually this time of year, you prefer to be able to be saying something about baseball.
Yeah,
but
doesn't look
not
good
for you.
For my team. It's like, oh, I'll root for this one. They lost. Oh, I'll root for that one. They lost.
No dog in the hunt anymore at this point.
Kind of the which they may be eliminated, I think, tonight. The Texas Rangers, because of Bruce Bochy's managing them, and he was the great Giants manager for many years.
Oh, okay.
They should never have let him walk.
What is Bochy's?
Oh, it's great. You get some sausage and you
there
press
you
it together with some bows, and then you get
Bochy's. Right as this is brought releasing, the participants in the World Series may very well have already been
true.
Decided. The Texas battle versus the
Texas battle.
No. Because the Astros are playing the Rangers, right?
Yes,
that's an internal Texas struggle.
Yeah.
And then it's like opposite ends of the earth for the other one, which is the Phillies and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I'm impressed that you know that.
I know stuff.
Hockey stuff.
I do know hockey stuff. Season's young there. I don't have any comments on it yet. Other than the fact that the young draft picks, the top five draft picks actually are from last year are all looking pretty good.
They're that's good.
Good for 19-year-old children.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter, Kelsey's a big hockey fan. And she got me to go to some of the Indiana games in the minor league. And, boy, talk about babies playing hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, and the minor leagues, once you go below the ACH, the AHL, you're either talking about babies or old men.
Yeah, complete has-beens.
Really, really need to find another avenue for income in their life.
Time to move on. Yeah, I had that in non-affiliated professional baseball in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there'd be guys who were undrafted and, you know, were a foot shorter than I am, but still had like a power arm as a pitcher or whatever, and some really, really almost as old as I was guys.
Right. Should be coaches.
I did see one of Ricky Henderson's last games. That was the last, as far as I know, that was the last league in which he made an appearance, and he was almost 50 or something.
Get out.
Yeah, and he was still fast, still had a decent arm, not as good as he used to have. But his swing had slowed down as it naturally would. And so that's why he was in this very, very low league.
He was a base runner. That was, you know.
Yeah. Well, he was also a very good hitter.
Yeah.
I think he still has the record for leadoff home runs.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I did not know that.
And I have his autograph on a baseball.
Well, this has been baseball talk. sports ball talk.
Sports ball. Wait,
go
hockey
sports.
Uses a ball?
Actually, it's funny. A friend of mine we're doing an outing, an event, a hockey outing tomorrow. No, on Monday actually, and she was like, "I can't wait to go see sports ball." It's like, well, it's technically a puck, but
yeah.
Sure.
That's
sure,
what
sure,
one
sure.
of my daughters says.
Yeah.
Like, go team, do the thing.
Yeah, can't. I love it when you guys do well at the sport that you play in. But but like all things, to bring it back to the core of this podcast, as with all things, sports are from God. So hey, we're still enjoying God's creation by delving down this very deep, very rich, very unrelated rabbit hole.
Yeah, and I'm picturing, you know, an arena with artificial ice on it, or a stadium with concrete covered with very cheap cheap rug.
Hey, look, it's a church to some people.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, then, let's see here. Let's
do some history.
Let's do some history. Yay, history ball. our first entry comes from 370 AD. Saint Regulus is wrecked off the coast of Scotland while carrying the bones of Saint Andrew, who is therefore adopted as the patron saint of Scotland. A site near the wreck becomes the seat of the Archbishop of Scotland. So
I wonder if it still is.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But I like this decision. I don't know what the plan, like, this entry doesn't really say what the plan is. So maybe I should go back and do some more research. But the imagery that it gives me is they're traveling somewhere. They're carrying the bones of St. Andrew. They wreck and they're like, yes, holy ground. Announce the enemy as intended.
Far as we go.
This is, as I thought moments ago, this is a perfect place for the seat of the Archbishop here in this land. Lovely. So, but also, I mean, I know it was far more common historically, but thank goodness we don't do it now. You know, traveling around with somebody else's bones is weird to our modern day
just to
personas.
My credit, I actually had a long conversation with two parishioners, very good conversation, entertaining conversation, about visiting the churches of Europe that have like a vial of Jesus's blood. And
I'm sure it's not snake oil at all,
right? You know, they have to be careful not to giggle while they're in line.
Yeah.
But so it's still a thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, I take it back.
You don't have to take it back.
I will take it back because, you know, many of us, like, you know, will preserve individuals, family members and the like. And if you move, you got to do,
gross.
You know what I mean? Like, we didn't, but like, well, I mean, yeah, technically we did. And like we interned my dad, but like.
But you didn't move him later.
No.
Okay.
But we moved him to that spot. You know what I mean? Like, it was
okay.
Yeah,
yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean? Like, so, and I know some people do hold on to their family members, vases and that kind of a thing. So it's not that it doesn't happen.
Yes. And now I'm thinking of all sorts of pastoral stories I cannot share because of clergy confidentiality. All I can say is, yes, you are correct.
Yeah, this is where the fake sermon stories about the 8-year-old adding milk to it and saying that was the worst Nesquik shake they'd ever made. That one? That kind of thing?
No, these are true ones.
Oh. Well, I hope that one's not true.
I doubt it. Ashes don't really dissolve.
So, moving on, actually we go forward over 1,000 years to the next entry here. 1525, Luther introduces the first complete German mass at the city of Wittenberg. So that's
kind of his headquarters.
Yeah. Kind of his headquarters. 1666, death. Oh, go ahead.
It's no longer in existence, but I just got to do a call out to the National Lampoon of church journals. Was called the Wittenberg Door.
Okay.
And the table of contents on it would be, you know, in a drawn way, a hand-drawn way, the table of contents was a dagger through the piece of paper on a door.
On a door,
and
nice.
And it was all satirical,
yeah,
church articles and made-up stuff. And I discovered that in seminary and got me through some tough times.
There you go. For you youngsters out there, National Lampoon is... is today's Onion.
Oh, it was even beyond that.
It was a little beyond that. But I mean, as far as like closest comparison, I think that would be the, that would be the new, the Onion. So a clergy onion.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. 1666, we see the death in London of Edmund Calamy, the elder, that's his title, of Edmund Calamy the Elder. Okay. A Puritan supporter of England's kings during the Civil War and Commonwealth, he authored highly regarded doctrinal works such as the Covenant of Grace and the Covenant of Works.
Huh. I didn't know there were
which any. Which I've read thoroughly, of course.
I didn't know there were any prominent Puritans who supported the king.
Edmund Calamy.
Yeah, now I know.
Whose last name looks a lot like Calamity, but I'm going to... Yeah. I read it correctly. It's Calamy.
That doesn't make any sense.
1675, death of Andreas Hammerschmidt. Does that name sound familiar to you? Probably not, because it's not quite the Episcopal wheelhouse, but one of the most distinguished composers of church music in the 17th century. He's a Lutheran.
Okay.
Background, but yeah, the Hammerschmidt name is quite famous in the musical world.
Well, I've probably on the radio heard his stuff.
Probably, yeah. 1768, death in Essex of Joseph.
Wait a minute, is all he did die?
Yeah, he died.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, he did other stuff, yes. But on this day, yes, all he did on this day died. it was the only thing on his to-do list in 1675.
And it said, the biography was Bruce Gray will not know who this guy is, so just move on.
Exactly. Yeah, look, it's appearing right now. 1768, death in Essex of Joseph Grigg, an English Presbyterian minister. He had written many hymns, including Jesus and Shall It Ever Be. So another evangelical Don't Lutheran hymnary handbook entry. We have two of those today, which is kind of fun. 1863, a conference opens in Geneva to found the organization that later becomes the International Red Cross. It's spearheaded by Henry Dunant, a businessman influenced by Christian ideals.
Yay!
Yep. Good news there. 1885. What?
I just saw another story I can't tell.
Okay.
It just involves...
Stop teasing us.
It involves an RV and a Red Cross volunteer who had no sense of direction.
I mean, it's wholly unfulfilling, Bruce. You gotta know that. You gotta know that story just doesn't land with us. All right. Anyway. 1885, Ugandan's spear. Yes, that's correct. Anglican Bishop James Hannington to death. He'd been captured 8 days earlier.
That happened a lot in Uganda through the decades.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Under Idi Amin. And...
Mm-hmm. 1895, death in India of Nehemiah Gora, a convert from Hinduism to Christianity who had written several books in defense of his newfound faith. So entries from that side of the world, which we don't seem to ever get until like the late 1800s, early 1900s, just because of that's how it spread.
Well, frankly, that was when the British colonial period started.
Yeah.
Well, not just British, but Europeans realizing the economic value of the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah. 1900, dead even. I shouldn't have said dead even. Death of Reformed Swiss theologian Frederick Louis Godet. Who is noted for his commentary on the Gospel of John. Another Lutheran entry, by the way. So a lot of Lutheran entries today.
Not a good day for Lutherans.
I mean, you know, yes, all the entries are about people passing away, but, you know.
They aren't forgotten.
Their entry wasn't the guy who got speared, so one assumes death of semi-natural.
The guy who got speared, was he a Church of England fella?
He was, let's see here, History of Christian Missions. Boy, that tells me nothing. It just says Anglican bishop.
Yeah. Okay. Anglican's us.
Well, yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I was trying to think of specific. Yeah. No. Gotcha. 1907, the Red Cross awards an Orthodox nun a medal for her relief work during the Russo-Japanese War. The reason I said an Orthodox nun is because now I'm going to say her name, which just honestly makes me giggle. Matrona Petrovna Frolova.
Wow.
Matrona Petrovna. Matrona Petrovna Frolova.
Does sound like an arch enemy in Rocky and Bullwinkle.
No, darling. Matrona will head a nunnery in Kazan, but the Soviets will confiscate the property. Eventually, she will be imprisoned, beaten, and executed for her role in resisting Soviet atheism and alleging hiding church valuables.
But
allegedly hiding church valuables.
When was it she got the award?
1907.
Okay. I thought I remembered that war was before the Russian Revolution. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Matrona Petrovna Frolova.
And totally unrelated trivia is Theodore Roosevelt was highly recognized for helping negotiate the peace of the Russo-Japanese War.
That's related. It's just not related to Matrona, but
yeah,
that's a related time. So there you go. 1919, death of A.B. Simpson, the founder of the Christian and Missionary Alliance and of NYAC College, N-Y-A-C-K College.
I think that's how it's pronounced.
Okay. 1954, the death of Annabelle Russell in Corning, New York. She had been a Methodist hymn writer, a lot of hymn writers today, best known for the words to Wonderful, Wonderful Jesus.
Don't know it.
We got to educate you in other songs there, buddy.
I have been to Corning, New York and had a wonderful lunch there.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then our last entry here comes from 1972. Eustace Ruhindi is enthroned as the first Anglican Church Bishop of Bunyoro Kitara Diocese in Uganda. So another Uganda entry. Wow. Less spearing this time.
What year was that?
1972.
He may have been speared later. So to
speak. Oh, yeah, they did kind of go backwards, didn't they, as far as their tolerance on Christianity.
Well, just anyone who opposed the government.
Yeah. I guess that's probably the better way to phrase it. Yeah. So, that was this day in church history.
Ta-da!
Let's go back further. Leviticus. Leviticus is our first reading for this coming week. Chapter 19, verses 1 and 2, just a little introductory part. And then we go from verse 15 through verse 18. So here we go from Leviticus. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy. You shall not render an unjust judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great. With justice you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people, and you shall not profit by the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate in your heart anyone of your kin. You shall reprove your neighbor, or you will incur guilt yourself. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." We're missing verses 3 through 14, so like about 12 verses, or maybe exactly 12. What are we missing? What are we not hearing this week?
It's kind of the Ten Commandments, but not really.
Yeah, and I kind of noticed that. Okay, I mean, because we still have like the later part are. Feel somewhat Ten Commandment-y.
Yeah. It is God speaking to Moses.
Okay.
So, this is like the Ten Commandments. This is something Moses then tells the people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not considered a Ten Commandments episode.
Gotcha. Okay. And what about the book of Leviticus? I mean, we actually don't delve into Leviticus often in our readings.
Yeah,
we really like the prophets. I don't know what Leviticus is all about, though. Like, what's...
Yeah, it tends to make Episcopalians develop twitches. I mean, it's...
Why?
Because it has, like, don't eat shellfish.
No braided hair.
Yeah.
Gold jewelry kind of thing.
Don't eat the gecko.
Yeah.
And don't lie with a man as you would with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Really off the wall stuff by modern standards, even for Reformed Jews and most mainline Christians ignore Leviticus.
Gotcha. Except for the parts that they don't want to ignore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any Christian, it's a pick and choose book.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Years ago, I led a Bible study in the parish I was serving, focused completely on Leviticus. And what I emphasized was we were going to take big chunks at once so that people could get a sense of how the flow of Leviticus is how do you live a holy life rather than what does God want to punish you for?
Mm-hmm.
And that really opened up a lot of eyes of, okay, that's what it's about. How do you live a holy life? So not surprisingly, there are a lot of Ten Commandment sounding passages like what we have today.
Mm, gotcha. That would make a little bit more sense.
I forgot to answer your question, though.
Okay, Leviticus, yeah.
Written by what's called the priestly source of the Hebrew Scriptures.
Ooh, that sounds nebulous and fascinating and mysterious.
I've mentioned it before, where Leviticus is kind of the ultimate example of it, but there are a lot of priestly passages, as in credited to that train of thought, in Genesis. And concerned mostly with ritual and holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of Leviticus is in the gathering of verses that are called the Holiness Code by modern people.
So is it more likely that Leviticus is more of like a crowdsourced effort?
It's definitely crowdsourced among the people who help priestly theology.
Gotcha. So that might also play into, especially when taking big chunks of the book in recognition that it's like they probably either sat down together or passed around a version of it and people added to it like, nah, what about the shellfish?
Yeah.
All right, John. Shellfish. Yeah, sure, fine.
Well, I remember as a wee kid visiting my grandparents who lived near the ocean, and they had these big signs up that even I could read at age 9 or whatever about do not eat the shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
And I made some jokes. Dad, that's like the Bible. He's like, well, who are you? I said, you take me to church.
Yeah, yeah. What's funny about that, though, is it really is mistranslated. It's don't be selfish. And it just he had a bit of a speech impediment and they heard him wrong. So got it. Don't eat shellfish.
Must have meant eat.
So this is more of a restating of holy life practice, which is the reason why it sounds very Ten Commandments like.
Actually, it's more of a commentary.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's like, okay, you've all heard the Ten Commandments now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we think. Here's how to interpret them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, because it does kind of like basically, it's not word for word stated. Right. But it is kind of basically, you know, you shall not render an unjust judgment, kind of a more like a Ten Commandment size thing.
Right.
And then an additional statement on it, meaning you shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, with justice, you shall judge your neighbor, kind of giving them a little bit more, some more words to help them, define what the intention is. So that makes some sense.
Yeah. And in the second verse where it says, speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy for I, the Lord, your God am holy.
Mm.
That's why this is why we now label this as part of the Holiness Code.
Okay. Got it.
Because the effort of it is not to gain God's favor and therefore be able to conquer other kingdoms. It's instead, how does an individual and a community live a holy life?
Gotcha. Okay. Verse 17, the commentary section strikes me as being potentially some fertile ground for translative choices. Because, it, you know, words like reprove and incur are fun English words for sure, which I even had to look up the word reprove to I was like, wait a minute, it sounds like, and it is, reprove means to, like, you know, berate or reproach.
Yeah.
But looking at it, you're like, you mean like to prove again? Or like, that doesn't make sense considering the,
think of it as don't go nuh-uh.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious to see like, those choices there for the words there in 17, just for funsies.
Yeah. I'm looking at the,
because the first reprove. Part, yeah, go ahead. For the listeners, I'll restate the first part, which is more the Ten Commandments statement. You shall not hate in your heart anyone of your kin. And then. And oh, I was going to let you do the
okay.
I was going to let you do the translative answer, because this is so it does say you shall reprove your neighbor or you will incur guilt yourself, but you know that does sound very like British you know, House of Commons kind of the right an honorable gentleman shall not reprove your neighbor or incur guilt.
Reprove is three times listed as one of the, in different connotations, the meaning of this Hebrew word.
Okay.
Rebuke's another choice, so it doesn't get any better.
Okay. Like I said, I was kind of curious because reprove is a,
yeah,
doesn't strike me as like, oh, that's a one-to-one translative choice.
Well, you can do rebuke. You can you can do correct.
Okay. Interesting. So you shall correct. Okay. Yeah. So this actually.
It's getting worse.
Because that really gives fuel to the fire for some personalities, right?
Oh yeah.
You shall not hate in your heart anyone of your kin. That's your call. But definitely feel free to correct your neighbor.
Well, that's. You got to have both.
Right. No, I get it. But that is interesting considering that, like, the other ones are a little bit more like expansive on like that's almost like a one-to-one expansion as to like what the statement is, and like, yeah, here's a little bit more about this statement. This one is the, here's the statement and other stuff. Go do other stuff too. Like, it's not just you.
Well, but part of this is, I think what this is about is we sometimes make a mistake of thinking that a holy community is conflict free.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure.
This is explicitly saying, no, you know, it's not going to be conflict free because you have to have those honest discussions about how we're all supposed to behave.
Mm. I'm just thinking about those troublemaker personalities that get to read this and then go, hey, neighbor.
Yeah, my day has
I don't come. Want to incur guilt myself, so sit down and listen.
But then, you know, next in line, sort of like the big fish eating a smaller fish, mm-hmm. the bigger fish eating the big fish, the next person in line is, you're being a meanie butt. Mm-hmm. You gotta stop.
Right. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself.
Yep.
Interesting.
And it's one reason this is significant is it's another place where love your neighbor as yourself comes up, you know, hundreds of years before Jesus saying it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So some people make the mistake of saying, Hebrew scriptures, they're the ones full of hate, and the gospels are full of love, like love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
No, here it is.
Yeah.
Jesus was well aware of this as a primary teaching.
We don't read enough of this section to, I think, fully prove this out. So maybe you can tell us whether or not it's true. The structure looks as though essentially it's two different verses, both having to do with similar topics. And then they end with, I am the Lord.
Yeah.
And then move on to another topic, maybe somewhat related, but different in nature, because we do have here in where we start, as far as this portion of the reading goes, the first part is just introductory, but in verse 15, you shall not render unjust judgment, and you shall not go around as a slanderer among your people. I am the Lord. You shall not hate any in your heart anyone, and you shall not take vengeance. And those two things kind of seem to pair together. Is that really kind of the structure? There's like for the rest of the chapter, like here's a couple of things that are related. I am the Lord. New topic. I am the Lord. New topic.
But they build.
Do they build? Okay.
Yeah.
Build to what? What's the culmination of this?
You're seeing.
And therefore, be on your best behavior. I am a vengeful God. I am the Lord. Right. Fire and brimstone.
You shall keep all my statutes and all my ordinances and observe them. I am the Lord.
Okay.
So that was a good. Okay. Good. He's done.
Right. Got it. Yeah.
But more comes next. It's just not in the I am the Lord phraseology.
Gotcha.
But it is the Lord spoke to Moses saying.
And so again, crowdsourced material. Yeah. So Leviticus goes, and another thing.
Yes.
And let us not forget. All right. Before I go down
the next thing gets
Monty Python style rabbit hole there for myself.
Oh, I can give you more fodder for that. The chapter 20, most of it's about sorcery and false gods and most of all child sacrifice, killing children.
Oh, geez. Okay.
To appease these foreign gods who... Guys, trying to say they're not real. Stop doing that.
Pay no attention to this story in the Old Testament about where I almost have somebody do it. But
well, no, that part of the point of that is that
exactly.
God doesn't need that.
But shame on Abraham for thinking that I would ever do such a thing. Didn't you read?
Yeah, I can't remember where I just saw a funny satire. Oh, I know. If one has not watched Good Omens, season 2 has a fantastic episode that very accurately critiques the Book of Job.
Oh, cool.
And gets into some of that. But God, you said.
Right. Interesting though. Interesting. Yeah. Anything else about this passage from Leviticus?
Oh, I started to go too far.
I'm now on chapter 29.
Yeah, just about. I often say, oh, make sure you read the whole chapter. Unfortunately, it really is. Try to give yourself a few days and read the entire book of Leviticus.
Mm.
And you can see, therefore, what a tiny bit the... anti-gay passages are, and the context they come in is worshiping of false gods, not sexual behavior of a normal kind.
Gotcha.
It's not about two men falling in love. It's about, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to the temple and do this ritual sex so that I have a good crop.
Right. Yeah. No, that's that is actually a very interesting point, because as far as like a lot of cultures in the past, in particular, but there are still some that are around. One of the things,
some are coming back,
right? Are like they're built around, as far as their deity structure, like you call as a, you kind of communally call on your god, and you have to perform certain things in order to get their attention,
right,
and have them appear. So if that's
there are branches of Christianity in the U.S. who function that way.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. But yeah, that
the Episcopal Church thoroughly disagrees.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so that makes sense if that passage is in more in the worship of false gods,
right,
area of like, yeah, that I could definitely see that being a thing. Like, nope, we all got to do this, and or otherwise, God 15 won't appear. I'm good. We can just go on a God 16 and do the ritual dancing thing. That'll be fine.
That's a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's move on to
the psalm.
Our psalm. Psalm. Our psalm this week is Psalm 1. Psalm 1 reads this way. Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked or take the path that sinners tread or sit in the seat of scoffers. Yes, I know. But their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. In all that they do, they prosper. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. All right, we scoffed ourselves at it. Let's tackle that part first, since we both kind of laughed at it. Sit in the seat of scoffers. Again, one can only imagine a British dude writing it this way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, it's definitely scoffers. I know these folk. Yes. Why do we ever give them the vote?
Scoffers. What's the Hebrew?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me find out. While I am, oh darn, not Samuel, Psalm. It does sound like that could be an easy mistake, but it was silly.
Yeah, I'm gonna drive home the imagery here too. So happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, that's the verbal advice, or take the path that sinners tread. So like physically actually mm-hmm. following them, or sit in the seat of scoffers. It's like these are very different positions to find yourself in to be led astray. But
yeah, the Hebrew there. Is of the scornful, the mockers, the deriders.
Mm-hmm. Again, some more English yeah. words.
Scoffers. Show oneself a mocker. Don't show yourself as a mocker. Hmm. Or to be a mocker.
Hmm.
It doesn't get better. Just like, yeah, these are weirder and weirder.
I'm just imagining a mocker in the tent, like the seat of mockery within the temple, just being so obnoxious.
I'm picturing it filled with teenagers. But just from my personal experience, not right, out right. of anyone, only family.
Really, Rabbi? Really? I'm supposed to
Oh, my God. My God, not your God.
Psalm 1. This is only 6 verses long.
And that is the entire
psalm. And that's, yeah, it's the entire psalm.
And it is the first one.
I was going to ask. Because, I mean, obviously, unlike other books of the Bible... Psalm is a collection that people have decided the order in. It's not like, here's the letter of somebody to somebody, and that's how the letter reads. Like, right. This is like, so all everything from Psalm 1 to, and I forget what the last one, what number the last one is.
150.
Like, something like that. Yeah. Like, they have their own beginning and end, but as far as the order that they appear in the Bible, we determine that.
Right.
So, why did humanity pick this to be the first psalm? Any ideas?
Yes.
Okay.
And not just my ideas, but scholars. For a while, there was speculation that it was written to be the first psalm.
Hmm.
But then people thought, well, you know, it probably would have been a little better at this of explaining how to use the Book of Psalms
right
than this one really is. So then people now are a consensus that it was a psalm that was part of the hymnal. Again, that's what the Book of Psalms is.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the hymn collection of the temple. And when the collection was being gathered as a book, the editors at that point said, yeah, this psalm, this is a good one to start with.
Hmm.
It's short. It's sweet. It says scornful. That's a good one. because it does say basically, how do you deal with scripture? It was decided this is the one to start with.
Yeah, in a way it does. I think you're right. As far as how to utilize the Psalms, this psalm doesn't really do that very, you know. It really does kind of, I like how, if you think about it, it's setting the right mindset. Because obviously we've been reading Psalms for over a year now?
Yeah.
Over a year now. And including it as part of the part of the podcast instead of the second reading. And so when you think about what this is saying, you're right. It's short, sweet, to the point, which is, hey, we don't want to follow the instruction that will lead that is not long lasting. That will perish. And that's the way of the wicked. That's the way of
the scoffers,
the mockers, the deriders, which sounds like a bike gang.
A really bad one. We fall down a lot, so they call us the deriders.
We're the deriders. You got to enter a blood pact in order to join our group.
Blood and asphalt.
Exactly. Don't follow the instruction that isn't going to last.
Right.
For the next 149 Psalms, we're going to show you the set of instructions that does last.
And
the different types of hymns, the different types of prayers that should help enrich your soul and enliven your religious experience. Because that really, so this, in a way, this kind of works as the introduction, as opposed to the first psalm, because it's not a prayer. It doesn't sound like a hymn.
It is.
I mean, it really, I guess
okay,
it does.
Let me ask you
I guess
this.
It does.
Does
but,
it sound like a cheer for your team?
It's too long.
That's true.
You're
a hockey fan.
Anybody who attempts a cheer this long is just going to lose it.
We can never remember anything after the first line.
When I say happy, you say, are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked happy?
Yeah.
I do take it back. The more I look down this, it does kind of sound more like a internal contemplative prayer.
Yeah.
Still doesn't strike me as a hymn. It does kind of, it could sit very well as a foreword or as a, as an introduction, because this really does kind of set like, hey, if you think about what we're saying here, as you're reading the rest of it,
you're in good shape.
Your mindset is right for getting all the information.
And one thing that's interesting here is, in verse 5, where it says, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous.
Mm-hmm.
There's a congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That at least implies, if not is explicitly saying, there's temple worship going on.
Right.
Which is another one of those, oh, David did not write this since there were no congregations yet.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it all was still scattered and on the road. Very evangelist of them. The traveling roadshow, but
pretty high church.
So yeah, really, really high church. Anything else about the psalm here?
No, I kept sneaking in the stuff I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the gospel reading, which, surprise, surprise, if you've been listening the past few weeks, in like the last 20 weeks, it's coming from Matthew.
More than 20.
Has it been like all year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay, not December.
I was going to say, actually, I think there's like I think we had like one of the...
We did have a chunk of John.
We had a chunk of John, and I feel like early on in this season, we had like one rando Sunday with a Luke reading, and we were like back. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. All right. That was weird. It's like...
Whiplash.
Yeah. Narratively speaking, you're kind of like, oh, that was weird. I don't know how that got in there. So Matthew chapter 22, verse 34 through 46. Hey, we pick up pretty much right where we left off.
Exactly where we left off.
When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees. Actually, no, that's after a little bit after, right?
Well, they're paraphrasing a bit.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, it's the, do you pay taxes to the emperor? Jesus says you give to the emperor. What's the emperor's and to God? What is God?
Right. And they went away amazed.
Yeah. Well, no, that, and now it starts.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Matthew 22. I'm right. I'm right. When they heard this, they were amazed and they left him and went away. Verse 22. That's how our last Sunday ended.
You're right. I can see.
Ha ha!
Where's my wallet? I got to pay off the bank.
So we actually do skip 13 verses or 12 verses.
Yeah, we skip the story about the fella who dies. Well, actually about the woman who marries like six brothers one after another with each one
that
dying.
One. Yeah.
And so in eternal life, who is she married to? As supposedly the great proof that eternal life doesn't exist.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and I promise I will end up reading this gospel. But so essentially the setup is the Pharisees come with the Herodians, test them about money, leave amazed. And then the Sadducees come. And they're like, ooh, I want to test this guy too.
Yeah.
They come with their woman marrying multiple men after they die. And
the Sadducees did not believe in eternal life. So this was one of their proofs.
Right. Because the question was illogical. She was married six times. Which guy is her husband in heaven?
Yeah.
in the afterlife. Dumb question. Anyways, you're in heaven. You know, last thing you need is a man,
which is what Jesus says.
So now they go away, and now we pick up in our reading.
Yes.
When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, what commandment in the law is the greatest? He said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, while the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked him this question. What do you think of the Messiah? Whose son is he? They said to him, the son of David. He said to them, how is it then that David, by the Spirit, calls him Lord, saying, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. If David thus calls him Lord, how can he be his son? No one was able to give him an answer, nor from that day did anyone dare to ask him any more questions. Okay, so we have two parts here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tackle the first. So Pharisees actually probably feel a little bit more better about themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, okay, well, the Sadducees got, you know,
way smoked.
Yeah, they got smoked too. So like, when, you know, as dumb as I felt just a couple of minutes ago, at least we're not alone. We're like, okay, they're not smarter than us. That's good.
And technically within Matthew, it wasn't the Pharisees who first got smoked by Jesus. It was followers of the Pharisees.
Okay.
He sent followers and Herodians to ask the taxes.
That's
question.
Interesting. So that also kind of, because I think last week we talked about it in a way, kind of how dumb the structure of the question was. We kind of delved into that.
Yeah.
So, I wonder now, as we're creating a little bit richer of and larger of a story as to how it's viewed, I wonder if the Pharisees themselves were over in the corner going like, all right. So, you know,
that didn't work.
Jacob over there is going to go and he's going to ask this question. And then they're listening in and they're like, oh, I knew I should have written it out for him. Oh, God. All right. Well, that's embarrassing. All right. So they gather together, and one of them, a lawyer, and here's the first ever lawyer joke, I guess, coming from the Bible, asked him a question to test him. What is test-worthy about this question? And again, anybody who's listening to this should like peel away the knowledge of what he says in order to understand why this might be a test, because we know what he says, and therefore modern minds as we read this, we're like, well, yeah, this kind of isn't that much of a testing question because it makes sense. All the laws are kind of hung on these commandments of love. But
for a certain subset within Judaism at the time, there was and Jesus said something like this, not one piece of the law can be ignored.
Mm.
And so it was sort of like, do we pay taxes to the emperor? Type of question where it's you can't ask which is the greatest because they're all, we love all our children equally,
right?
And in many ways it sets up contemporary Bible interpretation because mm-hmm. clearly Jesus is saying no, they're not all the same, right? Everything hangs on this,
right?
On love,
right? Yeah. And like I said, we have a tendency, or at least I think so, or I know I do, to kind of gloss over this because I think you're right. I think in this moment is when this theology essentially is kind of brought forward of like,
yeah,
no. It's about love. Everything else after that important, but just kind of like we read in our Leviticus reading.
Yeah.
It's just expanded context.
Exactly. And that's why we had that Leviticus reading.
Yeah. It's almost like it was chosen on purpose.
Which it was.
Almost. And you can see why Jesus, the theologian here in this moment, chooses to include a second commandment. Because it does, while love is the point, it is showing love both in heaven and on earth. It's not only is it a personal relationship between you and God, it is a personal relationship between you and other people who are also God's creation. Mm-hmm. And then once you establish those two things, everything else falls kind of like hanging on a hanger on it. It's just like
mm-hmm.
that. It all ties back to that.
And is subservient to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other commandment cannot exist without these.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
these two.
And cannot be interpreted without these two.
Yeah. Anything more about like this first section before we move on to the second section?
Yes.
Okay.
It occurs in all three synoptic gospels.
Okay.
Interestingly, Mark, which we traditionally and I think accurately think of as the original mm-hmm, gospel.
The first written one.
The mm-hmm. first written one expands on it even more.
Oh, which is odd for Mark.
Yeah. Usually because Mark is the most terse.
Yes. Yeah. Short and to the point.
Yeah.
He did this, he said this, and then he moved on.
Yeah. And here, he uses the term scribe rather than lawyer,
mm-hmm.
Lets him say, you are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one and there is no other but he, and to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding, with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is much more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. And when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God."
Hmm.
So it's, in many ways, a much more positive interaction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Matthew and Luke ones are.
This is that this is that lawyer's aha moment.
Yeah. You're
like, well, let's create a test. Okay, all right. Yeah. And then the answer surprised this really smart guy.
Yeah.
I mean, or at least believed to be smart, and well, one would assume.
He was, it was like that. Well, it's a great teaching technique.
Yeah.
Of having the dialogue such that the student comes up with the answer, and therefore it's more driven home because they came up with it,
mm-hmm.
even though it's what the teacher was trying to get the person to go to.
Right. Exactly. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting. All right. So that's the testing part of Jesus. And one imagines now that Jesus is like, all right, I'm getting a little tired of this. Now you answer one, right? So he on the spot. And it's interesting that it starts with this phrase. Now, while the Pharisees were gathered together, it kind of sounds as though the first part of the story, they sent forward this lawyer to ask this question. And Jesus, so which would kind of fit with the storyline. Jesus answers it. The lawyer goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jesus goes, hold on a second. And then he goes across the room and goes up to the guys who sent him. And he goes, all right, hey, you.
I think that's a good way to visualize it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Good to see you. What do you think of the Messiah? Whose son is he? Which kind of mirrors like the...
Any of the conflict stories here.
It does. But it also kind of has that who cares aspect of the question to it. In my mind. You know what I mean? The Messiah. Whose actual son is he? You know, since we just had this question of like, who's the married partner of this woman in heaven?
Yes.
And who's
Jesus is now taking on that technique. Right.
But it is, it is also in a way like, I don't know. I read that question. I go, who cares?
Right.
Who his son, like, who's he the son of? It's the Messiah. That's like the importance of the Messiah is well beyond what their lineage is. And honestly, the nerd in me goes immediately to some Star Wars critique that the Star Wars nerddom experienced with this more recent trilogy of like everything was like gearing towards like, oh, who is this person and who's their parents? Like, you know, like
what's the lineage?
Who cares? Let's stop. Not everybody has to be the son or daughter of somebody important. Just stop it. Like, that's not an interesting part of the story. So like I read this and same kind of a thing of like, you know,
definitely.
The Messiah, who do you think his daddy?
Well, and for that reason, you're totally, boy, I didn't think you'd get there, but yes, that Star Wars example is right on because for Christians, most of us read these particular verses and go,
mm-hmm.
irrelevant, especially post resurrection of Jesus.
Right.
But part of Jewish culture, part of a lot of world cultures to this day, the hereditary questions do make a huge difference in the amount of, well, in the life of whoever the questions are about. You know, is that truly the prince
mm-hmm.
in a royal lineage? Is it the firstborn? Then they get the inheritance. So, you know, it has a relevance in a lot of cultures today, but in the US it's a hard one because most of the time our mythology is everyone raises themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Right. Yeah. So, a fun peek behind the making of this podcast. Before we started, there was there was a book here in this room that we had that had the entire timeline, which was really more of the lineage.
The Begats.
The David lineage from like Adam and Eve all the way through. And it stretched the length of this conference room table. It was kind of, it was kind of impressive in that regard.
So it's probably 7 feet long.
Oh, easily. Yeah. Easily. It was kind of interesting. So he asked them this question. And of course, they give the well-known answer, right? The Messiah was going to come from the line of David. And he has this question that on first reading, you're kind of like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Like, what are you, how is it then that David, by the Spirit, calls him Lord, saying, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. I'm assuming that's a plucking of a verse from an Old Testament reading somewhere.
And checking the footnote. Psalm 110.
Okay. So if David thus calls him Lord, how can he be his son?
Mm-hmm.
So... talk a little bit more about this conundrum, like, because it's still kind of a little hazy to me. Why is this like one of those, I don't know, like no one can answer him. They can't give him an answer.
Well, the Gospel of Matthew starts in verse 1,
mm-hmm.
an account of the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So if Jesus was reading this book, he'd say, okay, yes, granted, I am from the house of David, but da, 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 da.
But is he?
That's the question. Yeah.
But is he real? I mean, think about it. But is he really? What's his connection? Which one of his parents has the connection to the line of David?
Well, yeah. And that's you were right on that in Matthew. The lineage is almost completely men. And in Jewish tradition, the lineage is through the woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of those ways in which we know that Matthew wasn't as Jewish as some people think.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't do the lineage right.
Gotcha. But if you do trace the lineage, if I'm not mistaken, it goes through Joseph's line. Yes?
Yeah. I think so.
And Joseph's not his dad.
Oh.
So he's actually not from the line of David.
Oh, wait. I got to turn the page.
Yeah?
Yeah. Jacob, father of Joseph. Yeah. You're right.
So he's actually not from the line of David. He's adopted into the line of David.
So they hit a sore spot. Don't talk about my dad.
But yeah, that, in a way, that, and that's what makes, you know, that so interesting is this genealogy, this lineage. The only one that would have any DNA shared with him would be his mother.
Yeah.
So he's actually from whatever line that is.
And I'm flipping pages here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, here we go. What I'm looking at is the lineage in Luke.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. It's, you know, as an Episcopalian, I always skip the lineage verses.
I think as a Bible reader, most of us do.
So, in
love the lineages, love them to death.
So after the John the Baptist events, and Jesus being baptized, there's sort of this aside. Jesus was about 30 years old when he began his work. He was the son, as was thought, of Joseph, son of Heli.
Mm-hmm.
Mary's not mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's traced all the way back to Adam.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's, of course, one of the similar questions is, was the matriarchal hereditary line the standard in Jesus's time, or is that something that came later?
Right, right, right. But I do find it interesting, as heretical as my statement would have been over many, many years, and it still probably is to some. Yeah, I don't think he's actually from the line of David. He's not.
Well,
but in that, like, I love it, it is a fulfilling of a prophecy. No, it still, but I love that it is fulfilling and still is a way that proves or that shows humanity, like, but you don't, that, you know, it wasn't what you thought.
Yeah.
It wasn't what it, like, you think you understand stuff and you constantly try to put yourself in the shoes of, like, oh, we know this prophecy. I'm in control. I understand this, right. You know? And like, no, didn't happen the way you thought, did it?
You listened to today's sermon.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. But yeah, it just, I love how the line of David prophecy is fulfilled in a totally unexpected way.
Literally unorthodox
way. Yes, yes. A very unorthodox way. And by modern technicalities, it isn't.
Like, well, modern Orthodox Jewish technicality.
Yes, yes, exactly. So it's just interesting. But it is a funny kind of, to me, it's kind of a funny question that he poses to them, is like, how do you, which is essentially like, how do you mix this mentality of earthly Messiah yet holy Messiah? Like,
yeah,
it's which kind of drives home the idea of, like, you're thinking about it kind of dumb.
Yeah. It's literally staring you in the face.
And I don't understand how you guys haven't been bothered by this conundrum all this whole time. Mm-hmm. If the Messiah does come, but you think it comes from this human line, but the Messiah is the Son of God. Those are contradictory, mm-hmm. you know, hereditary lines. So how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I cannot think of a Hebrew Scriptures passage in which the lineage is not through the men.
Yeah, no, it's always
like, you know, David, Solomon, mm-hmm. etc.
Yeah,
son of,
who lived 770 years.
No, that was before. That was earlier in the lineage.
Yeah, but that's the worst lineage. That one is the hard. It's like three chapters worth, and it's just impossible. And that's the reason why you'll never see it on any of our readings within the church calendar year.
Well, because that's why people stop reading the Bible so early on. They try to go through in order.
You make it through like three books, and you're like, I just can't. I don't care how this book ends. anything else about the second half of this gospel reading?
Just remember that this is the home stretch of Jesus's life.
Yes.
So these are the things that Matthew thought were the most important teachings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit more contemplative kind of round things out as far as his ministry, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I think we'll
have three chapters until the last
Supper. Okay. So it's until the Last Supper. Gotcha. With that, I think we'll call to a close. This is your podcast for October 29th, 2023, the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost. And as always, we encourage you to join us in worship. Oh.
We didn't do coming events.
Do you want to do coming events real quick?
Real quickly, since everyone else has turned this off. This Friday is Trunk or Treat.
Oh, yes.
Still time to participate in that.
What time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock this Friday.
7:30. Uh-huh. And there's still time to sign up to host a table. Mm-hmm. There's certainly time without having to sign up to bring children to find the true meaning of Halloween.
Which is candy. Yes. Next. Anything else?
Yes. A week from this coming Sunday, chili.
The chili cook-off.
You can sign up to provide chili. You can simply come and enjoy chili. Donations requested. Will be a great time. And I'll cut it off there. There's a lot more stuff happening in November and December. Go to the website.
Yes, holyfamilyfishers.org. But again, our services this Sunday, 8 and 10 in person. 10 o'clock service will be broadcast on our YouTube channel, HFEC Videos. So join us however it works for you, your schedule, and your family. And until next week, I'm Ben.
I'm Bruce.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.